The Markets.
We'll get back to Chris Gilmour at some point, I hope, because he's been done a lot of work on this, and I'm really curious, and I've tried several times this evening to get an answer on what is likely to happen in the world of supermarkets in South Africa in terms of the competitive landscape with Carrefour, but his line is just not collaborating. Somebody whose line always collaborates better than most is Peter Brooks. Peter is a portfolio manager at the Old Mutual Investment Group, and I think it's been a bit of a soggy start to the year, has it not, Peter Brooks?
It has, hasn't it? So we obviously had a cracking last quarter of the year. I was just writing my quarterly commentary, and the difference a quarter makes in terms of your annual returns, now it's something like that's quite pleasant, as opposed to before, it wasn't looking so good. So I think we had enormous returns. Markets are really strong, think about the Fed pivot. And so some profit taking seems to make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was just such a huge amount of exuberance, wasn't there, toward the end of last year? And that was reflected, I think, in the S&P 500, which this time last year was going to give us absolutely nothing, ended up giving us 26%. Based on this belief, rightly or wrongly, that 2024 was going to be the year of rapid interest rate cuts and a return and a recovery.
That's right. So the whole soft landing narrative, that got markets excited. And you can also see it a little bit with the positioning data. So as people bought in, you need continued good news to keep going up. And now we've got results, probably going to be a little bit soggy out there in the world if you sort of, obviously varying by country, but certainly in Europe, South Africa, I think things aren't going to be that amazing. So What keeps you going over the next hill?
Absolutely right. So what sort of signals are you getting, if any, at this early stage of 2024? How are things looking like they might shape up? You see, I'm couching the conversation very carefully here, Peter, because I realize completely that you can't say, well, you know, this is going to happen. But have the signals changed markedly?
I think we can look at this at many different levels. If you think about what are the big drivers in the year ahead, some of those are going to be ongoing themes that have been with us for years and that are getting stronger. So if you think about decarbonization, you think about demographics, all of these long-term drivers are in place and are coming through. AI, longevity. So we've got those are in place and remain in place and will continue to come through. Then you've got your more sort of cyclical noise, or what's happening to the world economy, what's happening to rates. And I think, quite frankly, that feels quite messy. It's going to be difficult to gauge, and that's why markets have been so almost bipolar. So if you think about the last year, think about interest rates shot up and then recovered. So long bonds, you lost a hoard of money, and then you made 20%. So you're getting these very big moves. You know, I was looking at returns for the year, for last year. Property just pipped equity, but very much in line with bonds. It's all much of a muchness between cash. But the property return was all delivered in December. So it's very dependent on point in time. And there, I think, I don't have a strong view in that sort of more shorter term space. So maybe I think some of the things that could dominate what we're looking at are going to be politics. So it is the year for elections. We've got the US, which is your global superpower. Now, you know my view in terms of multipolarity, that's in decline. But this whole election where you've got two octogenarians, I think that's the right term.
Octo is 80. So I think, yeah, I think we're in the right sort of ballpark in terms of linguistic accuracy there. Yes, Peter.
Fighting it out. Then we've obviously got our own election, which is going to be fascinating. And that creates a wide band of uncertainty. And for me, that I think is going to be quite important in terms of how do markets grapple with that.
But it's not just here. I mean, there are something like 50 elections happening this year, covering 45% of the world's population, representing about 60% of the world's GDP. So, I mean, this is a year of big potential change for the world. Some of it will be good, some of it will be indifferent, and some of it will be absolutely rotten because, you know, democracies deliver bad results for economies from time to time. And I just wonder whether this is the idea to be the year to be in cash or whether one continues with a sensible, diversified investment strategy and allows the politics to play itself out and the clutter and the noise and everything else and let markets figure out whether or not profits will be sustained for the future.
I think at least you've got a question where we're moving on to firmer ground, which is cash.
onto money and returns, yes.
In the long run, cash is diabolical. But sort of 1 year out of 10, it's amazing. And to me, if I look at the trends, you know, we had a very bad year, not this year, but the year before, where cash did so much better than your 60-40 portfolio globally. And if you look at the vast amount of money that's moved into money market funds around the world, and you look at the extent of the interest rate hike, and you look at, so certainly in terms of rate of change, it's been one of the sharpest we've ever seen. The rates themselves are back at levels, in many cases, we haven't seen for a decade, sometimes 15, 20 years. So that has been a good environment for cash. All things being equal, then, it shouldn't be a good environment going forward. So the other theme that I think we can have a relatively high degree of confidence on is the direction of rates is down. So the timing we can argue about, and that's what markets are fretting about in the short term, and that's where I'm saying that's the noisy part, and quite frankly, that's not the time horizon we tend to look at. We tend to take a longer-term perspective. So on cash, I think rates are coming down, and I think as a result, there's quite a lot of opportunity in the world in fixed income, so longer-dated bonds, but also, if you look around, there's plenty of markets that are offering decent valuations as well. So I think cash's sort of day in the sun is over and you should be looking elsewhere. But in terms of your other point around diversification, I would definitely agree because we don't know what's going to happen in terms of, let's say, our election, and we don't know how the market's going to react.
No, we simply don't. And however, on the opposite side of that coin, the valuations are compelling. The JSE in real terms has delivered absolutely nothing for the last 5 years. It's been, you know, sort of in a tightly wound range of between 70 briefly up to 80,000, but mostly between sort of 70 and 75,000 in the all share index, with some sort of switching in and out of resources and in and out of financials and in and out of some industrials. It's been kind of a patchy and really morose place to be if you've only been invested on the JSE. And I hear what you say in terms of diversification, but is it time that some of that diversification should be coming into the JSE if you've had a lot of money, for example, that made you that 26% in the United States last year?
So if we think about not knowing the future, and we take the example of the South African elections, what is the big risk? The big risk is an outcome that you don't expect. And that can be double-sided. So if you took the ANC as the middle and not hypothetically, you went EFF as the left, and that's bad for markets, and you went more rightist parties as good for markets, you've got the surprise is if we get a good result, because actually most people have diversified out of South Africa and have got low exposure. What is certainly true is that the offshore fund managers are very underweight South Africa. So if we actually get good news, they're forced to buy. So the rand strengthens, interest rates fall, the cost of capital drops, you have interest rate cuts, and you've got cheap valuations. Suddenly you can get some quite spiky moves. So the balance of risk is actually in South Africa is nobody expects good news. Therefore, good news is what you need to guard against. So in terms of my thinking, I run a worldwide flexible fund where I have the ability to take a lot, all of the money offshore. My risk is that there's good news in South Africa and I don't participate in that. Because yeah. for a Rand-based investor, if the Rand appreciates by 10%, all of your money's offshore, you've got minus 10. That's yes. very hard for me to land for my customer.
So how are you positioning then, Peter, briefly if you can?
So, look, I think in that environment, we tend to prefer SA bonds in the short term. There's less of a macroeconomic impact on the profits. You've got that very high rate of return embedded in there. And if you hold that through, it's got a massive spread compared to the rest of the world. And in real terms, you've got a stunning real return. So I like that for sort of a banker in South Africa for the next year. In the very long run, I'm more cautious about it because it's uncertain as to where we go to on inflation. And I'd prefer an inflation-linked bond as an example because it's protected. But I do think you need to hold some South African assets. So in that fund that I was speaking about, I hold 18% in South African bonds to give me that exposure.
Peter Brook, thank you. Peter Brook is a portfolio manager at the Old Mutual Investment.